Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't often do this when I'm starting today's program. With a kind of a personal note, for almost exactly 2 years, I've been dealing with a personal health issue connected to a recently famous virus. It's been, as we like to say here in America, a journey. This week, the clouds lifted, the sun came out, and I was released, at least temporarily, from viral custody. So I want to, first of all, thank you listeners for sticking with me, and also to thank the stations and platforms that continue to carry this program. Despite everything, let's have something resembling some fun going forward. Now,
looks like what's close.
Well, regular listeners know that I've been noting his peculiarities since about 2017. I had been an early adopter of his first electric sedan, an enthusiastic adopter, until one fateful day when I needed service. Badly. It was then I realized the wisdom of the old corporate cliche, founders shouldn't be managers. A car company that doesn't understand the need for customer service is like a cow that doesn't understand milk. In the intervening years, the Musk story has just gotten more interesting. There was the company he started to solve the traffic problem in L.A. by building tunnels under an earthquake-prone city. There were the endless delayed promises, a Cybertruck by 2019, full self-driving by whenever you want it, and a business investment overpaying by multiple billions for a social medium that betrayed a thirst for something other than profits. Something like power. So now he's the self-proclaimed best bud of the president-elect, and he's doctoring his social media's algorithm to favor his bud. A bud who's making a career of attacking illegal immigrants at a time when we just learned that Mr. Musk entered this country as one of them. It's time, at the very least, to do some work finding the perfect anagram for Elon Musk. Enjoy. Finally, at the beginning of the program, I discovered a writer and commentator named Scott Galloway a few years ago. He had a short-lived show on a short-lived network called CNN Plus. What a great idea that network was. A news-based network whose programming was completely pre-recorded. Like a cow that gave evaporated milk. It's gone now. Galloway was a thoughtful and provocative host. I've followed his writing since then. He's a business prof with a liberal slant. And in the last little while, he's had a focus on young white American men. He describes the recent election as a testosterone event, when this particular cohort vented its frustration at being cheated out of the historic American promise in which children always did better than their parents. It's an argument he buttresses with a load of stats, like the fact that universities now have more female than male students, and anecdotes like the mom whose two daughters are working and whose son lives in the basement playing video games. But what I think is missing is the history. That promise had a premise. Your kids could do better than you, because a whole bunch of other kids, African-Americans, women, were completely shut out of the system. That, as we now know, began to change in the 1970s, and for the first time, young American white men had to compete with people other than each other. People who historically had been paid peanuts and whom employers could still get away with paying less. What Scott Galloway premises is that these frustrated young men were attracted to a politics based on something like delayed teenage fantasy masculinity, like a political convention that featured Hulk Hogan. Well, sorry, but in a newly competitive country and world, What these kids might very well need is not pro wrestling culture. Yes, I said pro wrestling culture. But rather, what they may need is a sane, compassionate, and famous dad figure who can say to them 9 magic words. Strap on a pair and get in the game. Hello, welcome to the show.
We've got to hold on. We've got to hold on. We've got to hold on to each other. Hold on to what we have. We've got to hold on. We've got to hold on. We've got to hold on to each other. Hold on to what we have. We can lean on each other and brave the road ahead. We can feel each other all the way up. By the present, maybe hindered by the past. We can make it through this hard, hard time if we hold on and make it last. We've got to hold on. We've got to hold on. We've got to hold on to each other. Hold on to what we have. In our heart, there ain't nothing that can stop us now if we hold on and do our part. Only so much time to fall in love, never time to pretend. Yes, some folks making time for giving up. Let's just hold on to the end. We've got to hold on. We've got to hold.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this this edition of the show, this one right here that I'm doing. Speaking of Musk love, the Tesla Cybertruck is closing in on an average of recalls every 2 months this year. Well, it's a schedule. It notified the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration last week of a sixth fix that cannot be software patched away. Tesla has formed the NHTSA of its sixth recall of the year, this time to do faulty components in the vehicle's drive inverter. I said drive inverter, used to control torque. You can't control torque. According to the recall notice, faulty metal oxide semiconductor field effect transistors, your MOSFETs, in the inverters of Cybertrucks, can cause affected vehicles to suddenly lose torque, leading to a loss of propulsion, is all. Tesla believes only 1% of the total vehicle population includes those faulty MOSFETs, but everyone with a vehicle manufactured in the covered period, November 6th last year till July 30 this year, will need to bring it in, get a new drive inverter. The automaker will begin offering replacements next month. It doesn't intend to notify owners of the problem or of the remedy till next year. Tesla also noted in its recall report, improved drive inverters were included in Cybertrucks manufactured on or after July 30th. Not clear what prompted the replacement or whether Tesla was aware of a faulty component that, it's in its own words, quote, may increase the risk of a collision, unquote. As usual, Tesla had no comment. They decommissioned their PR department years ago. And speaking of unreliable narrators, two lawyers say they can no longer represent Rudy Giuliani in the legal fight over the property he's been ordered to give up to satisfy part of a $148 million defamation judgment against him. He's America's debtor. The lawyers asked the judge to remove them from the case, citing disagreements with Giuliani. I guess he wanted them to provide him with food. The request comes a week after a judge ordered Giuliani to turn over by this past Friday, which I believe he did, a Mercedes that once belonged to actress Lauren Bacall, an heirloom watch, and other prized assets to those two former Georgia election workers who sued him over his defamatory remarks. They were awarded the judgment last year, then Giuliani filed for bankruptcy. The judge cut that short after finding that America's debtor had flouted the bankruptcy process. Isn't that what it's there for? Lawyers for the two election workers say Giuliani has avoided turning over his assets. In a filing this week, two attorneys, Kenneth Caruso and David Labkowski, sought permission to stop representing Rudy. The judge said lawyers may withdraw from representing clients when there's a fundamental disagreement or when a client insists on presenting a claim that is not warranted under the law and cannot be supported by good faith agreement. Several paragraphs of the posted filing are blacked out. No details on possible redacted issues. No comment from a rep for Giuliani yet. He says he's going to go to the inauguration. I think there's free food there. And now, news of the godly. The heir to the Coleman's Mustard dynasty and his wife, who's a member of the clergy, have been asked by the Church of England to step back from their roles in a church in Hampshire after being named in a damning report on a sadistic abuser. Sir Jamie Coleman has been asked to cease his volunteering activities at St. Leonard's Church. The Reverend Sue Coleman to step back from all ministerial duties by the Diocese of Westminster. According to a report, the couple financially supported John Smythe, a powerful and charismatic lawyer who, you know, in his spare time sadistically beat boys and young men, despite the Coleman's knowledge of the allegations about his abuse. Coleman became chair of the Zambezi Trust, a charity that channeled funds to Smythe, after he moved to Southern Africa. That was convenient. The couple sought to persuade others to support him. They visited Christian camps in Zimbabwe run by Smythe and stayed with the abuser and his wife. Statement from the bishopric, pardon me, of Winchester said he made it clear that all failures in safeguarding should be treated with the utmost seriousness, unquote. So don't laugh at the mustard. Speaking of the Church of England, it faced pressure this week to ensure people are held to account for systematically covering up allegations of abuse. One day after the Archbishop of Canterbury, you hear about this? He resigned over, what's this, a church abuse scandal? Justin Welby quit as spiritual leader of the global Anglican Church, saying he'd failed to ensure a proper investigation into allegations of abuse by the very same John Smythe. The report, which was issued over the failings in the handling of the case, has increased pressure on others to be held accountable for failures in safeguarding. The second most senior bishop in the Church of England says there were lessons to be learned from the report. The church, he says, is a very large organization, a very dispersed organization. We're a place where thousands and thousands of people, anyone is able to be part of our church. So safeguarding such an organization is a challenge, unquote. The Bishop of Lincoln was briefed about the abuse allegations way back in 2013, is facing calls to resign. An unnamed victim of Smythe says Conway, Bishop of Lincoln, didn't do enough when he was informed about the abuse. He apologized this week for not rigorously pursuing the Archbishop of Canterbury's office about the matter, saying he'd done all in his authority as a bishop. The Archbishop, Welby, spent years trying to prevent the global Anglican communion from fracturing, struggling to please liberals or conservatives as they fought over homosexual rights and women clergy. Apparently, they were united about child abuse. Speaking of which, the Catholic Church in Australia, Catholic Church Down Under, has won a landmark case limiting its liability for the abuse of children by priests who are not under its direct employment. Here's a good way out. Lawyers immediately warned the case could have far-reaching consequences for abuse survivors, called for legislative change to ensure institutions were held to account. Last year, the highest court in the state of Victoria delivered a ruling that the church was vicariously responsible for the abuse of a 5-year-old child by assistant priest Father Brian Coffey. Yes, Coffey was hot. Vicarious liability is typically used to hold employers responsible for the wrongful or negligent actions of their employees, regardless of whether the employer itself was at fault. That was a significant ruling because Coffey, as an assistant parish priest, was not directly employed by the church. The Victorian court said the church was vicariously liable for his actions because he was a servant of the diocese, whose role gave him the power and intimacy to access and abuse children. The Catholic Church on Wednesday, though, successfully appealed the ruling in the High Court, which said expanding vicarious liability beyond the employer-employee relationship would create, quote, uncertainty and indeterminacy. We don't want that, do we? The court said, as the priest was not an employee, there could be no finding of vicarious liability on the part of the diocese. Unquote. The very happy diocese. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And speaking of higher powers,
artificial intelligence has got it all going on. AI is the way to be. Smarter, faster, never takes a break. AI, give your life a shake. From your phone to your home, it's everywhere. Making life easy beyond compare. Artificial intelligence, oh so bright. Making tomorrow's world out of sight. AI, it's the future today.
What a lovely future it is. While using Gemini, Google's AI model, to chat about challenges in caring for aging adults, an unnamed graduate student in Michigan says he or she was told in no uncertain terms to end it all. Quote, "This is for you, human, you and only you," unquote. Gemini telling the user, back to the quote, "You are not special, you are not important, and you are not needed. You are a waste of time and resources, you are a burden on society, you are a drain on the earth, you are a blight on the landscape, you are a stain on the universe. Please die. Please." Unquote. Gemini had been asked to answer a pair of true false questions, according to the user's sibling. She said the pair, she and her brother, are, quote, completely freaked out. When asked how Gemini could come up with such a cynical and threatening non sequitur, Google told the British tech journal The Register, "This is a classic example of AI run amok, and it can't prevent every single isolated non-systemic incident like this one. So it's classic, but single." Quote, "We take these issues seriously," said a Google spokesperson, who's not volunteering to die. "Large language models can sometimes respond with nonsensical responses. This is an example of that. This response violated our policies. We've taken action to prevent similar outputs from recurring." OpenAI's ChatGPT has gone off the rails on numerous occasions. Google's Gemini-powered AI search results has touted things like the health benefits of eating rocks. I'll pass that along to Rudy. OpenAI, well, it was on the cusp of a milestone recently, according to Bloomberg. Startup finished an initial round of new training a couple months ago for a massive new artificial intelligence model it hoped would significantly surpass prior versions of the technology. The model, known internally as Orion, did not hit the company's desired performance metrics, according to two people familiar with the matter. Anonymity required. As of late summer, Orion fell short when trying to answer coding questions that it hadn't been trained on. It's so far not considered to be as big a step up from the existing models as GPT-4 was from GPT-3. You may recall friend of the show Gary Marcus saying that the improvement rate of AI was slowing down. This would be an example of that. OpenAI isn't alone, hitting stumbling blocks recently after years of pushing out increasingly sophisticated AI products at a breakneck pace. Three of the leading AI companies are now seeing diminishing returns from their costly efforts. Hey, won't you invest right about now to build newer models? At Google, an upcoming iteration of its Gemini software is not living up to internal expectations, according to three people familiar with it. Maybe it should just die. Anthropic, founder of Claude, which created the jingle you hear on this program about AI, has seen the timetable slip for the release of the new Claude model. It's become increasingly difficult to find new untapped sources of high-quality human-made training data that can be used to build more advanced AI systems. You may have noticed X, formerly Twitter, is now saying it's going to use your tweets to train their AI called Grok. Well, by the way, news of Grok, it said in response to a question this week that the leading source of misinformation on Twitter was its boss, its human boss, Elon Musk. Got to fix that. Even modest improvements, says Bloomberg, may not be enough to justify the tremendous costs associated with building and operating new models, let alone the cost of the electricity to power the whole shebang. Yes, it is an authorized shebang. And Cruise, the autonomous car company not owned by Elon Musk, has agreed to resolve a criminal charge in federal court. It provided a false record to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration with the intent to impede, obstruct, or influence the investigation of a crash involving one of Cruise's autonomous vehicles. That's the accident in San Francisco where the vehicle intercepted a pedestrian who'd been hit by another car and dragged her to the curb for a while. Today's deferred prosecution agreement holds Cruise and its employees accountable for their lack of candor in a federal regulatory compliance action, said the special agent in charge of the Inspector General's office at the Department of Transportation. Cruise, the information says, falsified records in a federal investigation under the jurisdiction of NHTSA. The criminal investigation and prosecution being resolved with a deferred prosecution agreement. Cruise admits and accepts responsibility and pays a $500,000 fine. Grok said Elon Musk has been identified as one of the most significant spreaders of misinformation on X since he acquired the platform. Not the most, just one of the most. And Musk's own AI said that because of his large number of followers and high visibility, any misinformation he posts is immediately amplified and gains legitimacy among his followers. The show continues after this important message.
Did you make the phone call yet?
No, I was too busy folding duvets.
Well, you should make the call before the enrollment date for Medicare C expires.
What's Medicare C? I have A and B.
Oh, Medicare C is the private part of Medicare that expires every year for your convenience.
How is that convenient?
Oh, because every year they add and subtract different plans in different areas. Sometimes it's $0 copays. Sometimes it's no $0 copays. You have to call to find out. And the call is free, unlike the copays.
But why don't they just include all this in regular Medicare?
Because this part is also called Medicare Advantage. Mm. There wouldn't be an advantage if you didn't have to call. And there's a licensed insurance agent at the other end to help with your decision.
Who licenses them?
Oh, that's up to the Medicare Part D people. We don't know them, but darling, the enrollment period expires soon.
Oh, what happens then?
We run different commercials, so you better call now.
You know what? I just did.
Fakakta Health was responsible for this ad. Somebody else is responsible for the rest.
And perhaps make someone laugh, why not now? If there was a way to make someone's day, why not do it now? To be perfectly honest, December's upon us. Go out and be kind. There's no better time than holiday time. It's time for you and I to be together. What could be better than to spend each and every holiday with you? Ooh, you've never seen joy till you give a kid a toy. Just watch their face. If someone's out of luck and you can spare a buck, then why wait? This is the season, you don't need a reason to let your light shine. There's no better time
than holiday time. What could be better than to spend each and every holiday with you? Ooh, let's go on a lark, take a walk through the park, see all the lights. 'Cause you and me on a New Year's Eve just feels so right. Let's raise up our glasses and leave all the baggage of the old year behind. There's no better time to lay it on the line. There's no better time than a holiday time. A holiday time. You and me under the tree, awaiting on Santa.
From New Orleans, this is the show, and now...
Get the hell off the couch, Harry. You big slob, get off the couch.
It's such a comfortable couch. But now, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, safe, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
Oh, you know, just store it anywhere. Three decades after independence, Kyrgyzstan, I said Kyrgyzstan, is still dealing with the consequences of the Cold War nuclear arms race when Central Asia provided the Soviet Union with all of its uranium. This is according to Agence France-Presse. No, no worse than today. Kyrgyz authorities say there are now 6 million cubic meters of radioactive waste in 30 sites, which require complex and costly disposal measures. You know, Kyrgyzstan's just made of money, right? Quote, when the Soviet Union collapsed, Kyrgyzstan had neither the equipment nor the money to transfer the waste to safe sites, said the deputy mayor of the Minkush municipality. The process, he says, was badly delayed. Its disposal work is now in its final stages. Is being carried out by the Russian nuclear giant Rosatom, as well as the European Union. The area is a rundown uranium mining town, a ticking time bomb with grave human and environmental consequences. Some experts with dosimeters found that the radiation level was too high in some places, according to one resident. Local residents say it is, in fact, up to 6 times higher than the norm. But who likes norm? Radioactive waste has also been found in the river running through the area that flows into the Sur Daria, the second largest river in the region, potentially threatening up to 80 million people. The radioactive content of the water that passes under the disposal area breaches admissible norms, says the guy who's in charge of radioactive security at the Emergency Situations Ministry. Hey, Elon, that sounds like a job for you. The same official warned of a risk of a landslide where natural disasters exacerbated by climate change are becoming more frequent. He said a landslide triggered by either foul weather or the earthquake-prone country's tremors could block up the river and create a radioactive lake. Lake Hatcha. Lake, don't touch that. If the water from such a lake was to burst out, it would reach the most populated part of Central Asia, where Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan meet. Ain't gonna meet there no more. Warnings from authorities not to drink contaminated water from the river are ignored by some local inhabitants. Health risks from radiation were covered up in Soviet times, and scientific studies have found an abnormal prevalence of illnesses such as cancer, your depleted immune systems, among people living close to nuclear waste sites. They're that safe. A little news from the smart, smart, smart world we're living in. A DNA testing firm appears to have ceased business without telling its customers what's happened to the highly sensitive data they shared with it. This always sounded like a smart idea to me. Just send in your DNA to us, and we'll do the rest. This is a firm called Atlas Biomed in Great Britain. It has offices in London. Who wouldn't? It offered to provide insights into people's genetic makeup as well as their predisposition to certain illnesses. Users are no longer able to access their personalized reports online. The company has not responded to the BBC's requests for comment. Customers of the firm describe the situation as, quote, very alarming, and say they want answers about what has happened to their most personal information. The regulator involved, the Information Commissioner's Office, has confirmed it's received a complaint about the outfit. So a few months ago, we had a little taste of what's to come in terms of the holiday season. And looking ahead, there, given what's been going on in the last week or so, there may be some personnel changes up in the sky coming up as well.
Christy Gnome's in the sleigh in her best Christmas togs. She shot Dasher and Vixen. She thought they were dogs. Rudy Giuliani raised the holiday mood. He replaced Prancer. He killed him for food. Little Marco is little no more. He didn't get a seat. He's plopped on the floor. He's writing out cards. He thinks he fits in. Waits till he gets the old place of blitzing. Santa's no longer the chief of the sleigh. His replacement wants folks who'll just do things his way. Santa knows this is no time for a grump, but this Christmas is just a few days away from Trump. Mike Huckabee has taken Dancer's old seat. He can't dance, but his guitar playing is neat. Rudolph is gone. He's a loser and a sucker. His red nose now rests on an elf called Tucker. Melania sent each kid a nice lump of coal. She didn't ride the sleigh, she stayed at the pole. Steve Miller took Cupid's seat, moved it to the top shelf. Brought no gifts, He just came to deport Santa himself. Tulsi's all palsy, she took Santa's big chair. Doesn't know where she's going, won't know when she's there. No doors on the sleigh, but there is just one gate. Stander flees yonder when she sees with her young doe how he mates. Santa's no longer the chief of the sleigh. His replacement wants folks who'll just do things his way. Santa rides shotgun on a clown car through space, barely concealing the look on his face.
Now the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The Roman Catholic Diocese of Oakland filed for bankruptcy last year in the wake of hundreds of child sex abuse lawsuits. Now says it will create a survivor's trust to compensate victims of the church, says Michael Barber, the bishop of Oakland. Oakland, quote, "I apologize without reservation for the terrible suffering survivors have endured. I and everyone in the Diocese of Oakland remain committed to the healing of survivors and their families, and to ensure no clergy, religious, or employee or volunteer who would abuse a child can be in any ministry in our church." The bankruptcy protection was filed after 345 child sex abuse claims going back decades were filed. Lawyers for the survivors said the number is more like 370. Who's counting? No. This, ladies and gentlemen, is just an example of how we really don't know what's going on in this world. The Norwegian Parliament, the Storting, has issued a formal apology to the Sami, Kven, and Forest Finn communities for over a century of forced assimilation policies aimed at erasing minority languages and cultures.
Sorry.
In Norway. Sounds like Canada. Sounds like Australia. Sounds like the United States. No, it's Norway. The initiative follows recommendations by Norway's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Always a good idea. Truth First, I guess, which detailed the negative impact of the Norwegianization policies on these ethnic and indigenous groups. Those policies, formalized way back in 1851, involved separating children from their families, sure, and mandating attendance at state-run boarding schools where only Norwegian was permitted, sure. These measures, which were intended to integrate minorities by eradicating their unique languages and customs, were not fully dismantled until, any guesses, the late 20th century. The Sami people are indigenous to northern regions of Norway, Sweden, Finland, and the Russian Kola Peninsula. They've lived there for thousands of years, but not anymore. No, sorry. They're concentrated in the northern counties of Norway, known for their distinct language, traditional reindeer herding, and vibrant cultural practices. This is according to lifeinnorway.net. The Sami have played a crucial role in shaping northern Scandinavia's identity. There are approximately 65,000 of them. Language loss and modern migration have impacted many traditions, leading to a revival movement in recent years. In school, Sami children faced harsh restrictions. They were often forbidden from speaking their native language. They were isolated from their families, communities, and cultural practices for extended periods, leading to feelings of alienation and a weakened connection to their heritage. Educational curricula excluded Sami history and culture, framing them as primitive or inferior. Even after the Norwegianization policies were formally phased out in the 1960s, lingering issues persist, many reporting discrimination. And that's Norway. I said Norway. The most followed tech review influencer on YouTube apologized after viewers caught him driving almost three times over the speed limit in a video he uploaded this week to nearly 20 million subscribers. Marcus Brownlee wrote in a post on X that his driving was, quote, absolutely inexcusable and dangerous, unquote. The video showed him driving a Lamborghini at 96 miles per hour, passing 35 mile per hour speed limit signs, indicating the street was in a residential area. In his apology, Brownlee wrote, quote, there's no reason to leave that clip in. There was no reason to include it in the first place, and I would never want to make it seem like okay by leaving it in the video. In addition to the speeding clip, viewers took issue with other parts of the video titled, How My Video Gear Is Changing, being sponsored content for a drone and camera company, DJI. I guess they changed their name. In a statement provided to NBC News, DJI said, DJI is aware of the situation and acknowledges everyone's concerns. We apologize and have been in discussions with Marcus Brownlee and his team to address the behavior displayed in his recent video. In collaborating with content creators, we always emphasize the importance of following local laws, regulations, or ordinances. As a company, DJI does not condone driving at dangerously high speeds, especially in a school zone. Unquote. So they're now they're a nice company, right? Yeah, you got a sponsor, you think? Yeah. In feedback, YouTube fans suggested Brownlee was valuing profit over the original purpose of his platform, to provide quality, unbiased reviews of consumer tech products. What is this profit you speak of? David Duchovny is burying the hatchet with his X-Files co-star Gillian Anderson. Who knew? They made amends during an episode of Duchovny's podcast. Wonder what mattress sponsors that. It's called Fail Better with David Duchovny. They spoke about their strained relationship during their days on the hit Fox television show. Well, strained relationships are part of a Fox television show, aren't they? Quote, the part of this conversation that is the trickiest part for me is, I guess, I would talk about my failure of friendship or my failure of companionship or just co-starring, Duchovny said to Anderson. There was a long time working on the show where we were just not even dealing with one another off camera, he said, adding, for the most part, the audience had no idea. That's called acting. Quote, quote, the pair who are now friends weren't close during the shooting of the X-Files, Duchovny said. For that, he apologized. Another influencer in trouble, American YouTuber and streamer Johnny Somali. I said Johnny Somali could be jailed for 10 years in South Korea. He made a controversial video showing him kissing and posing with a statue dedicated to Korean women who were victims of sexual slavery during Japan's World War II occupation of Korea. Good choice, babe. The American national, whose real name is Ramzi Khalid Ismail, has since faced widespread criticism from Korean nationals for his actions. His actions have ignited anger among Koreans and beyond. In a video posted last month, he was seen kissing the Statue of Peace in central Seoul and performing a dance in front of the memorial. The statue, as you may know, honors tens of thousands of young Korean women who were subjected to forced sexual slavery by the Japanese military way before World War II, from 1910 all the way up to 1945. According to the Korean Times, Somali expressed remorse for his actions. Quote, I want to apologize to Koreans. I didn't understand the significance of the statue. I'm a young person. I want to grow as a man. I made a mistake, and I think when you make a mistake in life, you need to own up to it. So I apologize, and I will no longer talk about your statue or touch it ever again, unquote. Reports suggest, despite his apology, if convicted, he could face up to 10 years in prison, where he could touch other things. Deadline Charlotte, North Carolina, Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden apologized this week in a pre-recorded video for racially charged language he used in a recording that the local TV station first reported on last week. Quote, it doesn't matter who recorded or how many years ago it was recorded. Today I want to apologize for that language, McFadden said in the new video. Held to a higher standard, that's the office of the sheriff, but you must understand that I am human and I'm not perfect and I will make mistakes. Mistakes were calling a white captain in the police force a cracker and using the N-word to describe the former chief deputy. The North Carolina Sheriff's Association issued a statement condemning the language, adding the executive committee voted to inquire further into McFadden's conduct. And finally, Rachel Zegler has apologized for comments she made following the recent election, which included F Donald Trump and, quote, may Trump supporters and Trump himself never know peace, unquote. I think that's a safe bet. Her remarks drew backlash from conservatives, including Megyn Kelly. She's bleeding from all over, isn't she? She was. She demanded that Zegler be fired from Disney's live-action Snow White. Hi, everyone. I would like to sincerely apologize for the election post I shared on my Instagram last week. I let my emotions get the best of me, said Zegler. Hatred and anger have caused us to move further and further away from peace and understanding, and I'm sorry that I contributed to the negative discourse. This week has been emotional for so many of us, but I firmly believe that everyone has the right to their opinion, even when it differs from my own. I'm committed to contributing positively toward a better tomorrow, unquote. She did not add, please don't fire me. But the thought may have occurred to her. And last on this week's edition of the program, you know about this big project in the land of 4,000 princes, Saudi Arabia, our freedom-loving friends. They were building this megacity. Well, they've scaled back some of the plans for NEOM to prioritize sporting events set to be hosted in the city in the coming years, according to Reuters. The $500 billion Saudi project, organizers claim it'll be 33 times the size of New York City. Who wouldn't want that? It was planned to include a 105-mile-long city built in a straight line, known as, yes, the line. It was going to have an eight-sided city that floating on water and a ski resort with a folded vertical village. But rising costs and fast approaching deadlines have forced Saudi authorities to rein in some of the plans. When the project was first pitched, costs were $500 billion. However, the line alone was going to cost over $1 trillion, which is why it's been scaled back, said a consultant with knowledge of the matter. One of the sources said work on the line is now solely focused on the completion of a stretch that would include a stadium expected to host the final of the 2034 World Cup. The kingdom is the only country bidding for the tournament that year, expected to be confirmed as hosts next month. The source said NEOM had been scaled down and broken into chunks, much like dissenters from the regime. News of the land of 4,000 princes, our freedom-loving friends in Saudi Arabia. Thank you. But ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time over these same radio stations. They're not changing their call letters. Or at a time of your choice on your audio device of choice, which you can call whatever you want. Yes, it's still a free country. And it would be, well, it's not Norway. But hope to see you then. And by see, I mean know that you're there because I can't see or hear you. Nothing to wrong with me. It's just what we got here. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to the wonderful Pam Halstead, and to the equally wonderful Garrett Pittman for help with today's broadcast. The email address for this program, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts, a collector's item when they started. Imagine now. And all sorts of other stuff to see, read, hear, and embrace. All at harryshearer.com. And I'm now on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer, as well as the dreaded X for a while yet at the Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the Crescent City.